That was ridiculous. Y'all.
All right. I'm done with this intro. Stop the recording. Stop.
You have to push stop.
I gotta push. Hey, Warners. Welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes sales sexy again. I'm Rachel Pitts.
And I'm Gina Tremarco, founder and sales trainer at Pivot 10 Results and Carolina Improv. And Rachel Pitts, you didn't tell us any more about you. Do you want to share that with our listeners?
I think the name says it all.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, let's throw it over to Keith. Hey, Keith.
Ladies, how are you today?
We are
giggly.
We're giggly and we're in a really good, positive growth mindset.
Well, you know, you need to change your script. It has Rachel Tipton in there.
I know. Well, you know,
that's why it threw me off. That's threw me off. So I didn't say anything else.
Well, you know what? The two of you, all y'all, you know what?
We have fixed mindset.
All y'all got copies of the script first thing this morning. Just saying.
I have been busy with business.
Yeah, me too. Okay. So, anyway.
Your name's right, though.
This is a collaboration requiring all people to be involved.
Well,
if you want the script to be correct, I suggest you read it.
Actually, in real life, I'm still in the process of changing my name. So, jeez. On certain documents, like my name is still Tipton, or like it's just, I will have to check with people like, do you have Tipton or Pitts? Because I haven't changed it everywhere. There's a lot of steps involved in changing your name.
I know. That's why I didn't change mine.
Apparently on this script, I'm still Tipton.
That's it. Punishing you. You're Tipton. Tipton.
So what are we doing today?
I don't know. Seriously. We're doing something on mindset. Mine's really good at this very moment. It's going to be an ornery episode.
Now, our guest today, Keith, was kind enough to introduce us to. So, Keith, can you tell us a little bit about?
Yeah, our guest is Dr. Eve Masita. And I met Dr. Eve Masita, or Eve as we'll call her, in 2016 when she spoke to my Vistage group. And she was just an amazing, awesome speaker, the best we had. And she actually won the Vistage International Speaker of the Year in 2016. She's a psychologist by training. She's an author, executive, educator, professional speaker. She got her PhD from the University of Michigan, and she works with a lot of leading research and consulting firms and large and small organizations on this idea about having a growth mindset. And one note from her website about what a growth mindset is and working on a growth mindset, I just love this statement. A key focus of her work is helping people from senior executives to frontline employees shift from the desire to prove how good they already are to the development of an obsession with learning, effort, and improvement. And I just love that idea of an obsession with learning, effort, and improvement. She's spoken all over the world except for Antarctica, which is a desire of hers. And Eve, I'll be glad to join you for that one. And I'm really looking forward to what she has to say.
Yeah, she sounds really interesting. I love anything having to do with mindset and how to improve upon difficulties with mindset.
And dealing with people with difficult mindsets.
Yes, we can all use
help. I hope she
with
can
that.
Teach me some things.
I do too.
Well, before we get
I set him up for that, just so you know.
Help me. Before we get into this episode with Dr. Eve Masita, we should tell our Warners about Warner World.
And yes, we should. Let's tell them.
You guys can check out Warner World at warner-world.com. And we offer just a little bit more of us, just a little bit closer contact and a little more private sessions with us and all kinds of goodies. So if you leave a review on iTunes, you enter yourself into a chance of getting 3 months free access to Warner World.
Ooh.
Ah.
You might even get access to Keith.
Maybe.
We are very silly.
We'll get back
today.
To you on that.
We're very silly. One more thing before we get started with this episode for real. I don't even know if we've mentioned this. I don't know. I'm totally off script now. If you have not had a chance to review our show, please do that by going to iTunes. You can reach iTunes from our website, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com. Leave us a rating and review. We would so appreciate that. And I think it's time to start this interview with Dr. Eve Maceda. Let's do it. You guys ready?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Today on Women Your Mother Warned You About, we are really excited to have Dr. Eve Maceda on our show, and we're going to refer to her as Eve, if that's okay with you, Eve.
What are my other options? I should have asked that.
That's true. So we're going to stick with Eve.
Your Highness? I would ask for Your Highness if I was asked that.
We did not discuss those options. Okay. But no, Eve is good.
I would probably go with Princess for myself.
Nice.
You would go with Your Highness or?
Your Highness.
What would we call Keith?
Sir.
Keith, we're excited. We have Keith Walters on with us today, too. So this is going to be a really fun interview because there's four of us. And poor Eve, I hope she can keep up with us. She has been warned, though.
True. True.
Well, and let's give a shout out to Keith, who was really gracious enough to introduce us to you and convince you to come on this show with us. Thank you, Keith.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, I first met Eve back in 2016 when she did a Vistage presentation to my Vistage group, and it was amazing. And since then, she went on to be named the Vistage International Speaker of the Year for that year. And it was well worth, it's a great award, and she really well deserves it. She's a psychologist by training, and she was got her PhD at the University of Michigan. She's worked with a lot of research and consulting firms, partnering with a lot of different organizations. And her focus is on the idea of growth mindset. And I really love this line that I read about her. A key focus of this work is helping people from senior executives to frontline employees shift from the desire to prove how good they are, already are rather, to the development of an obsession with learning, effort, and improvement. And I love that line. And one question I had for you, Eve, is how do we get this Antarctic trip arranged? Because you've spoken everywhere in the world on all continents
except Antarctica.
And that's on my list. So maybe we can arrange for a session down there.
I mean, that sounds awesome. And I'm not picky. I mean, there's cruise ships. There's a research station or two down there. I mean, anyone who's got connections, please reach out. That's the only continent that's still on the list. So anytime, anywhere.
Yeah, and I haven't climbed Vincent Massif down there, so that's a whole expedition, too. So
outstanding.
Well, you know, sometimes all you have to do is ask the universe for what you want, and I love that you put it in your bio. Every bio that I've read on you always has that line in there, so maybe someone's going to pick up on that.
I figure if I keep asking for long enough, just like sheer volume alone, crossing paths with people, that'll happen, so...
Do you like the cold, Eve?
Well,
do you like?
I live in Colorado, and we're supposed to get snow on Wednesday, even though it's almost June, which is kind of disturbing. So, you know, it's going to snow. Might as well be in Antarctica.
Agreed. Agreed. Well put.
Well, a good segue, I think, is to start talking about when you talk about Antarctica and having that big goal. I think that would be right in alignment with talking about growth mindset, which I think is kind of what we want to start out with today, looking at the difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. And I should mention that the fixed mindset and growth mindset ideas, or the mindset idea, comes from Carol Dweck. Originally, Carol Dweck is a research psychologist. I'm a research psychologist by training as well. And I kind of stumble upon her work probably about 7 years ago, when one of my clients asked me to do a session on mindset as part of the leadership development program that they were doing. I had never heard of it, but I was like, sure, why not? And actually kind of thought inside my own head, another lay person gets their hands on a pop psychology book. And now I got to find some way to teach it that doesn't totally suck. So I did not go in with a super awesome mindset, but bought the book, realized about 30 pages in that I had the bad mindset, the fixed mindset, and have been a convert ever since. So if you break down the two mindsets, there's basically two: fixed mindset, the less awesome one; growth mindset, the more awesome one. And kind of at the core of both mindsets is kind of an equation that I like to think about, which is beliefs lead to behaviors, lead to outcomes. So what I believe influences how I choose to behave. How I choose to behave influences the outcomes that I get. And what we find is that there's a very different belief, behavior, outcome combination for each mindset. And that's kind of where the magic happens. So the belief, behavior, outcome combination for fixed mindset, the less awesome one, the belief is intelligence and skills are inherent traits. You either have them or you don't. So basically, you know, who you are is the genetic hand that you are dealt at birth that never changes. It is what it is. Boom, that's what you got to work with. And when you think that's the case, you get a really unfortunate set of behaviors as a result of that, really six things in the original model. So your job is to prove that you got the most important card in the deck, which is the smart card. And as a result of that, a lot of really unfortunate things happen because your job is to prove how smart, talented, awesome, amazing, perfect you are. So you get things like avoiding challenges, giving up easily, disdaining effort, being afraid of feedback, resenting other people, particularly when they're more awesome than you, because that makes you feel bad about yourself. So that's the fixed mindset one. And then the growth mindset one, by contrast, very different belief, behavior, outcome combination. The belief in that one is intelligence and skills are largely a result of learning and effort. So it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And that's largely up to you. And as a result of that, your focus isn't proving how awesome the cards are that you were dealt at birth. It's just trying to get better in whatever way you can. So your obsession, rather than proving your awesomeness, is just getting more awesome. So learning as much as you can, growing as much as you can, and you get essentially the opposite set of behaviors. So you love challenges, you keep trying, you embrace effort, leverage feedback, and get inspired by the awesomeness of other folks. So those are the two in a nutshell.
I love that. I read that book that you mentioned on a plane once, and I just was like, whoa, because especially the part about kids, and it's really, you know, children and how to nurture the growth mindset in them. And it's, man, it's a hard thing to do. Yeah. It is a hard thing to do to not be like, oh my gosh, I like the word perfect. I just stay away from the word perfect with my child and with myself too, when possible, because that one's a fixed mindset word for sure. And a scary one at that.
Yeah, it is. And I think that one of the things that's really tricky is that so many of the things that we love to say to other people and that we also love to hear are exactly the danger zone things. Anything that's you are not, we're in the danger zone. You are smart. You are pretty. You are good at math. You are not musical. All the you are not stuff that basically says, you know, genetic hand that people are dealt. You get those cards or you don't. And those things are not changeable. And that's the danger zone. But people love to hear that stuff. Kids love to hear that stuff. We love it. You're so smart. You're so pretty. But it's dangerous.
You know, it's interesting because from a woman perspective, I think a lot of women, and I've heard a lot of other women speak about this, when women are complimented and said, oh, you know, you look really nice today, or they're given a compliment, we have a tendency as women to be like, oh, no, I'm not. No, this old dress I put on, no, oh, no. We have a tendency to go there. So what does that mean about us?
Oh, my gosh. That, once again, that's like a whole nother podcast, I think. And I was just talking about this in one of the sessions that I was doing. And I think that somewhere along the way, and this is like a huge historical thing probably that others know way more about than I do, but somewhere along the way, this idea of modesty has become a huge thing for women. And I think that that's not just like being physically modest in certain ways, but also modesty in terms of accomplishments, because like bragging I think is somehow seen as not a feminine thing to do. And anything that acknowledges our awesomeness is considered bragging, I think, for women. And that's a really weird thing to be in. So yeah, I think that we have a tendency to diminish awesomeness because if we step into awesomeness, we're seen as being, I don't know, bitchy or bossy or arrogant or something, which is insane.
We're all about the brag here. No. Women, your mother warns you about, and we.
You want to? I was like, do you want to talk about it, or should we have to talk about it? It always goes back to the same book.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go.
And here's the thing: you know, it's not bragging if you can do it, right?
Well, and I think it's important to reverse what you were just talking about, that modesty thing that convinces women that it's okay to make yourself feel smaller than you really are. Mm-hmm. Whereas bragging, as long as it's truth, like saying, for example, in my career last year, I was a $1 million producer. It's truth. It's not like I'm the best realtor in the world. You know, those are two different things, like that. It's not bragging if it's truth. And sometimes women forget that it's okay to share the truth.
Yeah. And I wonder sometimes, you know, because one of the things we were talking about in advance was this idea of scarcity. And I wonder if those ideas are connected too. Like there's only so much awesomeness to go around. And if I take my fair share, am I reducing the amount of awesomeness for other people? And I just don't buy into that. Like, I think there's enough awesomeness to go around.
Yeah. Why can't we all have awesomeness? Seriously. I mean, I don't want to take from others, but I don't want to shortchange myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Keith, you look like you're chomping at the bit to say something.
Well, it ties back to a topic we get onto quite a bit, which is owning who you are. And if you are awesome, own it. If you have something to brag about, own it. If you want more out of life, own it and go for it.
Well, one of the things that Rachel and I both do, I'm pretty good at this. We haven't talked about it lately, but I write down based on the book Pussy by Regina Thomashour. I don't know if you are familiar with that or if you've read it, Eve.
Nice. I haven't, but it's now on the top of my list.
It's actually called Pussy, a Reclamation. So it's definitely, nice. It's worth the read.
If we talk Excellent. About this book enough, Regina will come on the show. Yeah. I'm pretty sure we mention it on every show.
Just about.
But there's an exercise in there which includes writing down three brags every day, three desires and three gratitudes. Yeah, at least that's what I'm writing down. So every day I get up and that's what I write down, are three brags, three desires, and three gratitudes to kind of. And it's a challenge. It's not always easy every day, but it's kind of interesting. The more that you brag about yourself to yourself, how your confidence level changes.
That's interesting. And you know, I feel like I'm having an interesting reaction to the use of the word brag. Like, I feel like that has a lot of negative baggage to it. And like, what if we didn't call it bragging? We just called it recognition or acknowledgement or something else and take like the negative valence off of
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Good. That's a good point.
Language matters.
I think that's a good point because I think there is a negativity because people will make those negative comments of like, oh, she brags about herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes, we do. Well, pulling it back to the idea of mindset, what are some ways that our Warners, our listeners, can deal with, work with, and work alongside or work for someone with a fixed mindset, or even better, notice it in themselves?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think let's start with how to notice it in yourself first, because I think that's kind of where all this stuff begins, right? So I think very first thing to do, and this is the easiest thing, but you know, maybe not the most accurate thing, depending upon where you're starting on the whole mindset thing, is to actually take a look at those six fixed mindset behaviors, you know, so look smart, avoid challenges, give up easily, disdain effort, fear feedback, and resent others. Take a look at those six things and take a really honest look in the mirror and say, okay, of those six things, which are the ones that I really struggle with the most? And, you know, people very often tell me in the sessions that I do that they feel one mindset in one part of their life and another mindset in another part of their life. And most commonly, people tell me they feel more growth mindset, the good one, in like their work life, their professional life, and they feel more fixed mindset in their personal life, their private life, their family life, and that kind of a thing. So, well, interesting set of conversations probably around that. But, you know, so take a look at those six behaviors and take an honest look at yourself in kind of all areas of your life, personal, professional, whatever it might be, and say, where do you struggle with those things? Which of these are your biggest challenges? I then often ask people to say, okay, once you've identified the behaviors you struggle with, next question is, how do those behaviors create problems? So when you start to behave in those ways, what happens? You know, how does it impact you? How does it impact other people? How does it make your life less awesome than it could be? And then final question I ask is, what are you going to do about it? You know, what are you going to do about it? And those tend to be really interesting conversations. So I think that's a great place to begin. I also really do recommend asking other people. And this is where it gets really scary. You know, ask other people. Yeah, exactly. Yes, I'm getting the scared face from Rachel there. which is this is the face I see every week when I talk about this. But asking other people, you know, of these six behaviors, which do you see me struggle with? What happens when I get in that space? And then what can I do about it? Can be illuminating, because how you see yourself and how others see you is not necessarily the same. And we have some blind spots on this. And for the record, the goal is not to look at those six fixed mindset behaviors and get to the point where you say, none of those, I don't recognize any of those at all. Because the only person who ever says that in my session is the most fixed mindset person in the room. That's the only person who ever says that. And interestingly enough, when I do these sessions, I would say probably like once a quarter, this really interesting thing happens, because I do a debrief of this. I ask people to choose things and then raise your hand for the things you struggle with. And about once a quarter, I'll have one person in a group who raises their hand for all six of the fixed mindset behaviors. And invariably, somebody else in the group pipes up and they're like, but that's the most growth mindset person in the room. Why are they picking all six? And it's just that the person who doesn't have any ego around it is willing to admit that, yeah, they still have runway on everything. So, you know, again, the goal isn't to look at those six things and say, well, I don't struggle with them at all. It's just to recognize where we all have challenges with them and what you can work on. So I would say that's the first place to start, is taking a really hard look in the mirror. Because once you do that, then you can approach other people from a different perspective, because you get it, I think.
On the reverse of that, how would you recommend dealing with people who have a fixed mindset, especially in business or in sales, especially if you're trying to sell to someone? It always feels like I'm selling to someone with a fixed mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess a couple things bring to mind here. One is to understand that the primary emotion behind fixed mindset is fear of judgment, fear of criticism, fear of failure, fear of imperfection. So if you understand that fear is the driving motivation behind kind of all of their decision-making, trying to figure out what they're afraid of and addressing that. So are they afraid of change? Are they afraid of loss of status? Are they afraid of, what are they afraid of? And addressing that issue, I think, is really important. So if what you're selling them can address those fears, great. If what you're selling them raises fears for them, well, you're going to have to address that. So I think understanding what they're afraid of and how you can help them with that, I think, is important. And I think one other thing that's really important to understand too is that very often the default response for fixed mindset tends to be no. So your first response is almost invariably going to be no. But you also need to recognize first response is not their last response. So I find that whenever you put pressure on fixed mindset folks, especially pressure them to make a decision, they're going to default to no. So giving them time to think about it, process it, work with it without the pressure piece, I think can be really important, because the default is no. So if you push it, you're going to get a no.
Yeah. I mean, I saw that actually firsthand last week, is somebody was pushing for a commitment when we wanted to think about it over the weekend, and it was like, well, I needed an answer today. And like anybody who needs an answer today, it's like, it's a no. It's you're pushing me too hard on something. And some salespeople think that pushing harder to get a yes is going to get them there faster, but it's the opposite. It's like, if you, the more you push sometimes, the quicker you get the no, and then got to start over again.
Yeah, that's certainly been my experience. And I mean, you know, thinking back to when I was in the deepest throes of fixed mindset myself, that was absolutely the case for me. You put the screws to me, boom, guaranteed no. Promise you, you know, which is interesting to look back and recognize now. I think it might still be true for me, but I'm at least aware of it now, which is a start.
I think it's partly identifying those triggers that you have. What is bringing that kind of visceral reaction up, and then identifying it and then trying to squash it.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And I, in your use of the word triggers is so accurate, because that's one of the things I also encourage people to think about is like, what are your own triggers for fixed mindset? What are the things that make you go there? Because we're not totally consistent on our mindset all the time. We have a range of mindset, depends on the situation, depends on the day. And understanding what your own triggers are, or the triggers of somebody you're trying to work with, trying to sell, you know, do they, you know, is it when they're hangry? So make sure you get them after lunch rather than before lunch. Yep, I'm raising my hand. Rachel and I are like, yep, hangry is one for me. I actually also find that dealing with other fixed mindset people tends to be a really big trigger for fixed mindset folks as well, too. Like you get into this death spiral. So if you're dealing with somebody who's super fixed mindset, you want to be careful not to get sucked into the spiral and recognize that if you go fixed mindset, it's going to make it worse and make it harder to sell them too, because you're going to feed off of each other. So,
any special techniques that you can think of on kind of fooling them into coming over to the growth mindset side?
I wish it worked that way. I wish there were like some magic wand. I think there are probably like temporary tips and tricks and things you can do in the moment to get movement. I don't think that you can change somebody's mindset like organically without them knowing what you're doing. I wish it worked that way. But I know. I wish it did. I do think that, though, you know, one of the things that fixed mindset folks really like to do is look smart. So anything that you can do to kind of flatter their ego, praise their ego in a genuine way, obviously, because they're going to call BS on you if it's stuff that they know is not true. But anything that can be flattering or complimentary in a genuine way, I think is helpful. And then asking for help or advice or input, I think is also really helpful, because it gives them an opportunity to demonstrate expertise, intelligence, those kinds of things. And that can sometimes be a way in. So letting them feel, you know, smart, capable, talented, I think can be helpful.
So in that case, would we use the phrase "you are" with them?
You are? Like the psychology jujitsu move there. You are so good at this. You're so talented. You're such an expert. So yes, like now we're getting into the use of this for the dark side of the force, right? For manipulative purposes. It can be used for the dark side. So yeah, not an overall recommended strategy, but on a temporary basis to achieve a good goal, I'm going to go with yes.
Okay.
On
well, and what I have used, and I don't know if this is something that you would agree with, but I experienced over the weekend working with a buyer who had this seemingly very fixed mindset. And when I felt myself, let's face it, when I felt my blood begin to boil underneath, I just was saying to myself, surrender, surrender, surrender to the moment, because I didn't want to start battling with this person. And because they just have their ideas about how they want things to be and how they think things are. So I just surrendered and kept trying to come up with ways to be more open to what they were trying to say. And then eventually, actually, it became a really great situation. But I had to like surrender my desire to have control, which I think sounds like me trying to be in the fixed mindset of I'm right and you're not.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm thinking, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about a strategy that is not necessarily, actually, it has nothing to do with mindset, but I think could also potentially be useful with kind of fixed mindset situations where you're getting pushback on something, right? And that's a technique you all might have come across it at some point because it's kind of a classic selling strategy. Acknowledge, empathize, respond, right? You know, which is, so if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is, that's the acknowledge part, empathize, oh God, I understand why that would suck. I understand why that would be upsetting. I would feel that way myself. Empathize, respond, what I need you to understand is blah, blah, blah. And we, you know, we have a tendency to skip to the respond. Like we know they're wrong, so we just want to get in there and correct their wrongness. But then that triggers their, oh shoot, I'm stupid, I'm wrong. And you're in trouble. I think that the acknowledge and empathize piece on the front end makes him feel heard and understood and opens the door to the response. And frankly, I don't think this is even necessarily specific to fixed mindset, because I think we all respond better to that. But I think it might be particularly important in a fixed mindset scenario to kind of diffuse some of the anxiety and the angst that goes along with that.
So switching over again to the growth mindset and what I mentioned earlier about kids, what are, because when I read that mindset book that you mentioned earlier, I was freaking out. I'm like, oh, I've ruined everything already. I've done it all wrong. So what are some of those things that we say to our children that prevent their growth mindset?
Oh my goodness. Okay, so many things going through my head. Number one thing probably is, actually number one thing, honestly, is how you behave yourself. And that's true for everything with kids, right? You can talk about this stuff forever, but they look and see how you behave, and then that's what they do. So number one thing is being honest with yourself about where you struggle with fixed mindset, working on that, and trying to live in the growth mindset space behaviorally. Yourself as much as you can. So that's number one thing. Number two thing, I think, actually is what we discussed earlier, which is the language piece. And that is, what do you praise, recognize, reward kids for? And is it the outcomes? And are those outcomes a result of you are not. So you are good at math, you are not good at math. So being really careful about the language. Again, the you are not. And then also, again, what I just mentioned a second ago, the outcomes, are we rewarding them for an A, or are we rewarding them for a phrase that I like to use is what we call full preparation, full effort. You did everything you could to prepare, and when it was game day, you left it all in the field. You know, maybe you only got a B, but you did literally everything you possibly could. You know, we want to focus on the preparation and the effort piece more than the outcome piece, because full preparation plus full effort plus learning over time gets us to whatever our limit is. So that's what we want to be focusing on, is those behaviors repeated. And I'll tell you guys kind of a cautionary tale that I share in my sessions. And it's so interesting. Came out of a session that I did in San Antonio, Texas, a while ago. And I had a woman in the group who, it was a business group, but she came up to me on break and wanted to talk to me about one of her kids. A lot of kids, 4 or 5 kids. And she said, Eve, I want to talk to you about my son. He's so smart. He's so talented. He's so gifted. Everything comes so easily and naturally to him, but he's so risk averse. He's just terrified of trying anything new. You know, he's in his little box, and I can't get him out of his box. And she said, you know, like, oh, where is that coming from? What do I do about that? And she had very specific ideas about raising kids, as I recall. She had a lot of kids. She had a lot of practice. And she said to me, you know, Eve, I don't pay my kids for chores. I think if you're a kid, you get chores. That's part of the deal. She said, I do pay my kids for grades, though. But I only pay them for A's. Do you think that has anything to do with it? And I was like, I'm going to have to go with yes on this one. But even as she was telling me the story, you could see the gears in her head turning. She's like, oh my God, I'm the one who's doing it. And, you know, you could see what she'd done there. Accidentally, she created an environment for that kid where there was an A and failure. There was money and zip. That kid had figured out, what am I naturally good at? Stay inside the box, stay in your swim lane. And it was a really good reminder of the fact that so many of the things that we do to drive people to behave in fixed mindset ways, they come from a good place. I mean, she wasn't doing that to make her kid risk averse. She was trying to push him to be the best he could be. She just didn't realize the unfortunate mindset consequences of the reward structure she created for him. So we got to be really careful about that. What are we rewarding and recognizing? Is it the outcome and perfection, to use your term earlier, or are we focusing on the behaviors that over time eventually get you to your most awesome version of yourself?
All that sounds like something really helpful for managers to use with employees as well.
I was just gonna tackle that, and I was gonna ask Keith to chime in on that too, because as you're talking about this and all the work that you do with organizations, how does that show up when you think about leadership that, you know, is really more concerned about the outcome than the effort and the preparation, and how does that impact an organization?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and this, you know, I say this in the sessions that it's a story that had nothing to do with business and everything to do with business. Because we really want to think very carefully around how have we structured the recognition and reward systems, the incentive programs, the bonus structures, and are we doing the exact same thing and driving the behaviors that we don't want? So that's always one of the recommendations I offer is, you know, go back to your organization, lift the lid on all of the policies and procedures, not just the ones with money and incentive, but all of that stuff, and see where are we doing some things where we've designed it so that people will behave in fixed mindset ways because it's in their best interest to do so. So that's always one of the first places that I suggest people look is those policies and procedures, maybe starting with the incentive pieces and the bonuses, but really looking at all of the components of the organization and the culture, whether they're written down or not, and looking for that stuff.
Yeah, I think one of the other things for leaders to do is look themselves in the mirror, because the mindset of the organization reflects the mindset of the leader. And it was interesting when I heard you speak in 2016 was shortly before we sold our company, and our company had a very much of a growth mindset. And it was interesting, the reflection that I did and several of my other staff who saw you speak did when we sold. The company that we sold to had a culture of fixed mindset, and it came from the leaders in the company. So looking at yourself in the mirror, because the mind, if you're in a leadership position, your mindset is working its way downward in the organization.
Absolutely. And, you know, as goes the mindset of the leaders of the organization, so goes the mindset of the organization as a whole. Absolutely true. Absolutely true. And, you know, getting back to the question of what to do with kids, which of course translates back to what can we do as leaders and managers too, because it's the same set of issues, whether we're talking about small humans or large humans, it's all the same stuff. One of the recommendations that I'd like to offer comes from an interview with Sarah Blakely. Sarah Blakely, founder of Spanx, who's the youngest female self-made billionaire with a B in history. She tells a really interesting story around kind of this risk-taking and experimentation and all these sorts of things. She said that when she and her brother were growing up, their dad at the dinner table every week on Friday used to ask him the same question. And it was, what did you fail at this week? And she said, if we didn't have an answer, he was disappointed. And she said what that did for her was really redefine failure. Failure was no longer about the specific outcome of a particular set of events. Failure was, you didn't even try. And she said that was so important for her on her path to success. And this is the recommendation that I offer organizations or parents. Think about how easy it would be to adapt that. You know, let's take the business case to begin with. You know, maybe have a weekly leadership meeting or a team meeting. Maybe one of the questions we now ask at that is, all right, what mistakes do we make this week? And what do we learn from them? And he was the leader go first. And then same thing, if we're talking about kids, you know, if what we want to encourage in our kids is full preparation, full effort. We want to experiment and try new things and stretch and challenge ourselves and learn how to fail better each time in pursuit of awesome. Maybe a question is, all right, what do we fail at this week? And what do we learn? Or what mistakes do we make this week? And what do we learn from them? And you as the parent, you as the grown-up, go first. I think it's one of the most powerful things that we can do to start to change kind of the conversation and the culture, whether it's a family culture or an organizational culture, around this kind of idea of experimentation, risk-taking, and failure, which is really at the core of growth mindset.
Boy, Eve, I could have used you last week as a fellow Vistage speaker in a room of CEOs. When I talk about we apply improv in business, and one of the biggest things in improv is failure, and we embrace it. We actually say embrace the suck of it. And that's where innovation comes in from a performance standpoint. But it's a talking point when I talk to Vistage groups, and I get some major pushback from one guy who gave me such a hard time about that topic of failure and really challenged me and put me in a corner. I wish I would have had you with me. I think I danced through it, but he was tough.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the journey talking about mindset has been an interesting one, because I realized pretty early on that the people who most need the message are the ones that are the most resistant to the message. The deeper in the fixed mindset zone you are, the more you think I am peddling rainbows and puppies up there. And I take a different perspective on it. Now my idea is open the door, show people amazing stuff, invite them in, and then it's up to them whether or not they want to do so. But I also recognize that fixed mindset's first response to mindset is no, because that's their first response to everything. So, coming from having lived 40 plus years of my own life in fixed mindset, I get it. Like, you know, nobody can spring any fixed mindset on me that I haven't lived before. Like, I get it on a genetic level. So I feel like that makes me kind of a good person to talk about it, because I didn't start growth mindset. I started in like deep in the trenches of fixed. So I understand where they're coming from. You open the door, you let them in, and some of them are going to walk over and some of them are not. And, you know, that's okay.
So the bottom line is that we can go from fixed to growth mindset. We just have to be ready to make that change. And somehow that has to come to our attention to be willing to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think that that's one of the questions I often get is it possible to change mindset, your own or other people's? Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Ton of things that we can do to do that. Awareness is absolutely the most critical piece. Simply just becoming aware of mindset very often is the most significant catalyst for folks. Once you get past the rainbows and puppies, this is BS, resistance, which is the fixed mindset talking. Once you get past that, awareness is hugely powerful. All that being said, one of the conversations we do have, particularly when we're talking about a business setting, is if you've got somebody who's super fixed mindset, there are two things you could be trying to solve for. You could be trying to solve for, is it possible to change this person? Or you could be trying to solve for, is it worth it to try? And those are really separate questions. You know, is it possible? Yeah. I mean, you give me infinite time and resources, I can change almost anything. Not necessarily for an investment that I'm prepared to make. You know, so is it worth it is really what you want to solve for. And, you know, you want to pick your battles, right? If you or one of your kids or your significant other is struggling with it, yeah, it's totally worth it. You know, if it's one annoying client who's going to be gone a month from now, you know, maybe don't pick that battle, honestly.
Or in personal relationships, sometimes it's just not worth the battle.
It's sometimes not.
Well, like with my child right now, I find that she sometimes gets into the fixed mindset thing of, I'm not smart, or I'm not good at math. I've heard her say these things before. Mm-hmm. And so I try, and I've always tried from a very young age to battle against somebody telling me I'm not good at something. And yet, sometimes I slide into the I'm not smart, I'm not this, I'm not that myself. I slide into it. But more often than not, I know that I can change stuff because I've done it enough times. And so with my child, I just try to encourage her that you can get better at math. And maybe you just haven't figured out how that works yet. And as for kids, like, why would you expect, I say this to her, why would you expect to be good at something that you just learned today?
Yeah.
You just learned it today.
Yeah.
So why not give it a chance? Because you just learned it. That's what learning is about. Like, it gets better over time. But sometimes we do, as adults, like, why am I not getting this? Or, you know, why is this not working?
Or when we're like, oh, I've tried it. It's not working. Maybe I should switch directions. Huh? Right? We do that a lot.
Yes. Yeah. And, oh my gosh, my brain is going so many places as you're saying this. You know, one of the ways that Carol Dweck, the original author, talks about kind of the essence of fixed mindset versus growth mindset, if you boil it down to its most essential elements, she talks about it as the difference between saying, I can't do it versus I can't do it yet. And oh man, there's just a universe of difference between those two statements, right? So the next time somebody says, you know, whether it's one of your kids or you, for the record, you know, or me, I can't do it. I can't do it yet. Right. So that's one thing I was thinking. And the other thing I was thinking in this is again, another kid story that somebody shared with me in one of my sessions a while ago. And it was, I think, a really good example of how can you teach growth mindset without teaching growth mindset? Like, especially if we're talking kids, you're not going to sit down and, you know, give them a bunch of PowerPoint slides. Like, how can you teach it without teaching it? And so this was a guy in one of my sessions, and he had a couple of kids. I think they were maybe 8 years old and 6 years old or something like that. And the 8 year old had just recently finished his first soccer season. Right. And the way the soccer season started was not good. Kid came home first week of soccer practice and apparently announced that he was not good at soccer and he wanted to quit. And apparently this was because apparently on this soccer team, the way the pecking order was decided was how many times you could juggle the ball back and forth with your feet without letting it hit the ground, kind of like old hacky sack style. Like, that was how we decided who was good at soccer and who was not. Kid could not do it very many times. So we decided he wasn't good and he wanted to quit. Dad conveniently had already read the mindset book and was trying to raise his kids from a growth mindset perspective. He's like, ooh, growth mindset, learning opportunity, teaching opportunity. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, make you a deal. Let's try a little experiment for the course of the soccer season. So the course of the soccer season was, I think, 3 months or something like that. And Dad said, what I want you to do is every day, I want you to practice juggling the ball back and forth with your feet for 30 minutes a day, just 30 minutes every day for the course of the soccer season. And let's just see where we are at the end. And the kid was like, fine. And Dad said, okay, what we're also going to do is we're going to put up a graph paper across the dining room wall. And every day after you do your practice, I want you to come in here and mark on there how many times you could juggle the ball, you know, before it hit the ground. And we'll just keep track of how we're doing over the course of the season. The kid said, fine. And Dad said, okay, so how many can you do now? What's the max you can do now? And the kid said, three. So, okay, we're going to mark on a wall, three. And Dad said, all right, so at the end of the soccer season, if you do this practice every day, how many do you think you'll be able to do? And the kid thought for a second. He was like, well, best kid on the team, he can do 30. So I think I'll be able to do like maybe 50. And already I'm like, I like this kid's attitude, right? Okay, good on you. At the end of the season, the kid could do 1,000. And like, he could probably do 1,000,000, but at a certain point you get tired of counting. You're like, and we're done. But you know, think about how valuable that is for that kid, because what happened, if you looked at the graph, it was, you know, 3, 4, 2, 5, but at a certain point it started to go up pretty reliably. And at a certain point there was just a hockey stick, something clicked and the kid got it. And get, you know, think about how valuable that experience and that visual is the next time that kid struggles with something and says, you know, I'm not good at algebra. I'm not good at art. It works exactly the same way as juggling the soccer ball. And I think giving kids you know, or employees or ourselves, the opportunity to experience that. Like, what happens if you actually engage in growth mindset behaviors? So resilience and grit and persistence and practice. What happens, I think, is super powerful. So looking for opportunities to do that, give those opportunities to others, I think as a parent or as a leader, really powerful.
That is super powerful.
Yeah. I'm thinking about how much graph paper I have in my house right now. I think I have a bunch.
And that's just for you.
Yeah.
One more question before we wrap up. Is there any... Have you seen this show up more so with women from a mindset perspective, or are there challenges that women have that maybe you have some advice around that they can get better at when it comes to fixed versus growth mindset?
You know, I would say I don't necessarily see a gender difference in the prevalence of mindset. Okay. I think it's fairly universal. My experience is there actually aren't a lot of demographics of any kind that predict where people fall. Because I think about it as a continuum, not one or the other, but a continuum from fixed to growth. So age doesn't seem to matter, generation, gender, a lot of the personality differences don't seem to matter. So I don't necessarily see that. I do wonder sometimes if there are differences in terms of how it shows up, you know, in terms of where, what parts of our life we feel more fixed about versus more growth about. And, you know, I don't really have any hard data on that, but part of my brain is saying, does this fall into stereotypical areas? Like the things that we think are most important as women versus the things we think are most important as men. Do we tend to get weird and protective about that stuff? Mm-hmm. Because that's where our fear kicks in. That's where our lizard brain kicks in. And anytime fear and lizard brain kick in, you're at risk for fixed mindset. You know, so is it for women, is it body image? Is it appearance? Is it age? Mm-hmm. Maybe.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, I don't see a difference gender-wise in terms of prevalence on this.
Okay.
So, you know, for better or for worse, we're all likely to struggle with it. And most of us spend, honestly, more of our time in fixed mindset than in growth. So if we're listening to this and thinking, oh, shoot, I think I struggle with fixed mindset things, yay, welcome to the rest of the world, because most of us spend way more of our time in fixed than in growth. So it doesn't mean you're weird or abnormal or whatever. It means you're struggling with it just like all the rest of us are.
And if you're self-aware, you can work on it and make it better.
Exactly. That's the first step. Absolutely. Always.
And if people want to connect with you or learn more about you, what are some of the best ways that they can reach out?
Yeah. So probably the best way is my website. So evemesita.com. Also on LinkedIn. And either of those would be great.
We've had you on for quite some time now, and it went by really fast. And we really appreciate your time and expertise. It was great getting to know you and getting this kind of information for our listeners. So thank you for being on the show today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Eve for being on the show today. And thanks to all of the Warners for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. To connect with me directly, Gina Tremarco, you can go to ginatremarco.com. And for Rachel, best way to get a hold of you?
Best way to find me is Rachel on Real Estate on all social media. And also you can visit me at theclosingcurve.com. How about you, Keith?
Well, for me, you can go to womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com and find our profiles, click there, get to my LinkedIn. And if you do send me something on LinkedIn, so I know that you're not trolling me, mention the Women Your Mother Warned You About podcast.
And you can find, of course, all of our ways to connect with us, Gina, myself, Rachel, and Keith, at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com, as well as some fun free downloads.
And one last reminder, if you could give us a rating and review on iTunes, we would surely, surely appreciate it. It's the way we get found. You could do it on the other podcast channels that you listen to as well, but iTunes is probably the best for getting that exposure. And remember, for the best relationships, keep it real, raw, and relevant.
And a little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
Bye, everybody.
Waters. Bye, everyone.
Bye, ladies.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, don't.
It doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.